The Homeless Podcast deals with topics of a sensitive nature and is not intended for all audiences. At times, this podcast may include explicit language or adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm heading up to Forks this morning to interview people up at Sarge's Place, which is part of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. And Klamath County, which is the most northwest county of Washington State, has the most... or the highest number per capita of homeless veterans in the state of Washington. And this is quite a depressed area between Aberdeen and Forks. It's beautiful. I'm driving through trees on a two-lane highway. You can hear logging trucks going past me. I keep having flashbacks from the movie Final Destination where the logs fall off. So I'm keeping my distance. But it's foggy out. It's dark. and it's quite a drive. But it kind of makes you wonder, why are there so many homeless veterans and homeless people living off in the outskirts, not near the large cities that have so many resources? We're going to spend the day up here in Forks, and I'm going to just keep recording, gathering ideas, telling you what I see, just to kind of give you some feedback on what it's like in the great Pacific Northwest, up in the dark rainforest, the only rainforest north of the hemisphere, in the northern hemisphere.
Close your eyes, take my hand, together we'll wander and search.
Welcome to the Homeless Podcast, Season 1, Episode 5, a podcast that tells the stories of those that live on the fringe of society. If you haven't already subscribed, please take time to do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or wherever you may be listening right now. As you listen to these stories, please note that the opinions stated in the Homeless Podcast by guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Homeless Podcast itself. It's a great joy to share music from Azam Ali, a poet, singer, composer, humanitarian, and a dear friend. Azam and I met years back at one of her concerts, and since then, we have shared our empathy for love of all things pure through music, art, and connection. This track is from her latest album, Phantoms, and it's called Ode to Melancholy. It seemed to be fitting for this particular episode. Please check out the episode notes for links to her music. You will not regret it.
Of today is tomorrow's dream. This is my ode to melancholy.
This episode will focus on an individual who has felt the calling to work with veterans, in particular those seeking a home or refuge. As we listen to her stories, consider the great sacrifice our veterans have made, as well as our active duty soldiers and sailors. And as our guest will talk about later, remember this. They signed their name on a line at one point, stating they would sacrifice their lives for you and for me.
This is my ode. to melancholy, to all that's been lost, to all that could be.
A ranger never takes the easy way out. Getting into the Rangers is tough, and the training is tough.
Be all that you can be.
So it makes me feel like I'm part of something really special.
Be all that you can be.
And I'm not the only one.
You can do it in the Army.
Jerry?
No, I'm Jennifer.
Jennifer, hi.
Jerry,
okay. Hi, I'm Russ, by the way. How are you?
I'm glad you came.
Yeah, absolutely. What a drive. I love
appreciate
it.
You
I did
out.
Stop and go to the beach for 10 minutes. Anytime I come by, I always have to check it out. Yeah.
The guys and gals have a 10 o'clock house.
Okay.
Have you had a chance to listen at all to any of our
I haven't.
Podcasts? Yeah.
The social worker in me just screams how awesome it is. So I firmly believe that, because I never would have thought I would be doing this work. It was this thing. It wasn't just a calling. It was it morphed into some things. But I, to this day, I look back and go, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
And it was funny because the original case manager, I'll explain how I got into it, but the original case manager, I said, it's like the stars aligned. And he goes, well, it's like you shoved the stars in alignment. but it bothered me so much that there were so many homeless veterans out here. It was horrifying to me. So it was this, it was a visceral reaction like you had going, who are these people? Why is this happening? Yeah. What's going on? I need to talk. It was like this pull, it sounds like, that you had to go do it. And I had the same exact experience. So I think that if these are the voiceless, and that's what, it actually makes me want to cry and get emotional about it.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is so freaking powerful for not just them, but hopefully some cultural shift.
Yes.
Our culture as America is all wrapped up in, homelessness is wrapped up with all kinds of different colored bows and different kinds of horrible bows and ribbons. And there's all kinds of different reasons why people are homeless. And for each voice to be heard is impactful for not only that person, but for our society.
Yeah.
Because people make assumptions with us here. They think everybody's a combat vet. They all have PTSD. If they're Vietnam, they have Agent Orange exposure. There's just these big brushstrokes of assumption.
Yeah.
And I substitute taught for 3 years.
Okay.
And so there's just different perspectives. So it's so it's funny. When I was a kid, I had a very isolationist family. I love my parents dearly, but they did their own thing.
Right.
They didn't seem to judge others or anything like that. But they were kind of just doing their own thing. So when we saw someone on the street in a wheelchair, something my mom would say, oh, that must be more challenging for him. But that was about it, you know?
Yeah.
And there was empathy. There was always empathy. So my mom, to this day, we were talking about the other day, she goes, I'm just surprised at what you're doing and that how passionate you are about it and where does that come from? So I substitute taught for 3 years after my third child was born, and that was life-changing with finances and everything. Then I started seeing kids falling asleep in class. And I'm like, what's going on? And they'd say, and the kid would, I woke up this one boy and I said, honey, why are you sleeping? And he said, because last night my mom's boyfriend came back and he had a gun.
Oh,
a gun. And he's running around. It still bothers me to this day because I know what a horrible position this kid is now, an addict. And he's running around the house and he says he's going to kill us. And my sister and I were really scared and we were trying to protect mom. He's a fifth grader. You know? And it was horrifying to me. And it literally, it was one of those little markers. It went in my head, like, something's got to change with that. What the heck? So after 3 years of the chaos of not knowing when I was working, I didn't like that. I didn't like that rhythm.
Right.
Anxiety in my own head. So there was a job at the mental health agency here in town for a case manager. I didn't know anything about that.
Oh, interesting.
But I had worked in Seattle, I had worked briefly for, worked isn't the right word, it was with some nuns that had a domestic violence shelter in the Central District.
Wow.
And I went there and I babysat children when they had their house meetings and support meetings. And these nuns were cool. I mean, they had their little headdresses on. Yeah. Oh, but they were like gritty. You know, they're like rolling up their sleeves and going, we're helping these women now. We're keeping them away from those people that were bad. And, it was like they were tough women. They were wonderful. It gave me a different perspective about social services and about compassion. So, and I've never been a religious person, but I was very touched by their living their faith. Mm-hmm. That's something I like to say a lot with folks around here too, because it's like, that's what it's about. So if you're faithful, of any sort. So anyway, I used that story in my interview, and I said I had internship with these nuns, how impactful it was on me, and how I felt like the working with the homeless is an amazing aspect, and that I learned a lot from it. Yeah. Well, I got hired as a family case manager. People that were in crisis with CPS, it was horrible. I hated it. Because I felt like I really wasn't creating any change and helping them. So I was only working there for a few months. And this other manager, this therapist, she came up. I was there in your interview. I said, yeah. And she goes, you mentioned that you work with the homeless. And I said, yes. She goes, I want to hire you as the housing manager. I look at her and I go, I don't know anything about this stuff. And she goes, you have it in you.
That's cool.
This is really funny. So it was funny to me, and I'm going, okay. And I had like zero I really didn't have much self-confidence by then. So it was kind of strange. Just this feeling I needed. This was my window. I was supposed to do this. So I did. I felt bad for my first boss, but I quit and I went over to this other apartment and was the housing manager. And I wrote a grant. And I was successful with this grant. We hired another person. By the time I left there, we had 5 people working there. We had 4 shelters, 2 family, 2 single. Mm-hmm. And I hit this groove. I felt I was giving back. I was passionate about it. These were people that society didn't want to talk to.
Yeah.
And I liked that. That sounds weird, but I liked being their champion to the underdog. I felt like I could have a voice for them.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me feel emotional when they have no voice.
Yeah.
And we had a contract, and we would go out in the woods looking for people. And I love that.
It was called Path?
Path. You can Google it and find it.
Yeah, of course.
So one of the very first people that I ever found, and this was just the synopsis. I know I'm telling a long story about how this started. So the first guy I met was Ken Thiele. This guy.
Above Sherry's desk is a black and white picture of a man appearing to be in his 60s. This is Ken. An Ernest Hemingway lookalike, if you take away 50 pounds, he has a long beard sprinkled with white and silver highlights. A long black pipe hanging out of his mouth, and he brings to mind the story of the old man in the sea. He looks like a fisherman who has been on solitary journeys across the ocean, and his salty complexion is hard and sturdy, and yet there is something in his eyes. The camera picks up a twinkle and a spark, and he appears like he is looking beyond your face, like he is looking into your soul and seeking someone to talk to. Sherry will refer to him throughout the day, and he has obviously made a major impact on her life and the lives of those he has met.
Picture. And Ken was a homeless vet living in a horrible little tiny travel trailer, no bigger than this, maybe just a tiny bit longer, on some people's property up at Shy Shy Beach area. Duck Point is what it's called.
Okay.
And so when he was living up there in the middle of nowhere, he was on someone else's property. So the park has assumed control of all the land along the coastline.
Federal.
Federal.
Yeah, okay.
And so what they've done is they've said, all right, you own that land. You have the title, but only for 99 more years. So most of this happened all up and down the coast, and people are real quiet about it. But there's a lot of angry people in this area because of that assumption of land. So if a relative dies, then it just goes right back to the state. So there's these little pieces of property up there that are owned by a lot of I-5 corridor people because it was their vacation spots. And so we're talking a 5-mile road that goes out to where he was living at the end of the road. And there are these cabins that don't have electricity, and they have a wood stove or something that they've taken in there. Decent road getting in there. 2 lock gates, so you have to have permission or you have to pay to get behind these lock gates, and Ken was way down at the end. So I'm at work at West End Outreach Services, the mental health agency, and I get a call from a man, and he says, there's this guy, and he's a Vietnam era vet. He said he's living up there at Shy Shy Beach area, and his vision is going, and his chainsaw has died. He can't fix it. And he said he'll just kill himself because it's practical. Well, I mean, I am not saying I want it, but I understand when people go, he was a voracious reader, and he couldn't read because of cataracts. And so I was like, and he's a vet? Yeah, he's a vet. I said, all right, get him in here. He goes, I don't know if he'll talk to you. I said, can I go up there? He said, no. He goes, it was two locked gates, and he would either be hiding or pull a gun on you. So, okay. You know, it's not going to happen. It'd be a beautiful area. Mm-hmm. He would hike over in that area, and that's how he met Ken randomly, years before. So I didn't know the story at the time, but he said, oh, no, no. I've got to drive back. I'm in Joyce now. I got to drive back over to Ken, and I've got to talk to him and get permission for him to meet with you, and then I've got to drive him back down to Forks. It might take a week or two before that happens. Okay, cool. So he does that entire procedure, and I meet Ken. And he was this little wisp of a man. He was small, frail looking, looked like a little leprechaun, I have to say.
Sure.
And he wouldn't look at me in the eye, you know. He's standing there and just looking down like this. And I said, so you got cloudiness in your eyes? He goes, yeah, I can't see like I used to. And he said, my chainsaw doesn't work. And I knew right then that the chainsaw would get me in with this guy, right? Yeah. Be the rapport builder, because it's practical.
Right.
And then maybe we could get his eyes fixed. So after a year of working with him, I helped it. He didn't have any income. He would just work odd jobs for people occasionally, or cut some wood for people, and they'd give him a little money, or I found out years later, alcohol, whatever. During that time, I got him connected to food stamps. And he said, wow, fresh milk. And we went down to the store, and he guzzled down a quart of milk real fast. This is awesome. And then he was happy with that. And then he also went and signed up for non-service-connected pension. So if a person served during a period of war, he was never in Vietnam, but he served during a period of war, as anyone could in his circumstances, they can get a non-service-connected pension, which back then was $1,042 or something. It's about $180,
$190
now.
Okay.
The number's escaping me, but it was just over $1,000. Steady income for him. But he had to be 62 before that could hit. So he applied for that and got that money. So I would hear connections and different issues with him kind of off and on. Rod would call me from Joyce. I'd hear things from a buddy of his in near Duck Point, Hoko, in the Hoko region. I'd hear from him about how he was doing. He would come to our veteran stand downs that we had in Forks, which is a resource for homeless veterans annually in May. So I'd see him once a year or so. He was always very nice to me. Got him a chainsaw. I forgot that part. Mm-hmm. Got him a chainsaw. Approached the local Lutheran men's group and said there was a man. There were a bunch of older retired men, and I was hopeful that they could give him a used chainsaw. Oh, they went out and bought him a brand new one.
Oh,
they
awesome.
Got him dry soups, and they got him a pair of boots, and they asked his size. It was amazing.
That's cool.
He couldn't believe I got him the chainsaw. In fact, to this day, I still have his manual.
I
have his manual.
I love that.
It's part of Ken.
Yeah.
So, well, and these things, we've got some things over here. He loves South Park. But about a year and a half ago, we got a phone call from Rod, and he said, hey, Ken is really, really sick. And I said, how so? And he goes, I think he's got pneumonia. He goes, I'm afraid he's just going to go to sleep and not wake up.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, he can't even cut his wood right now. He doesn't have a oomph. And he goes, I've got to get back home. I said, well, ask him if he'll stay here. At the time, we had a two-bedroom apartment available upstairs that we can use as a shelter. I said, you know, he qualifies for our program. He could just come here. So he finally agreed to come in, which blew my mind. So he went over to the ER. They said, yes, you have pneumonia. He stayed here a week. The week turned into a month. Pretty soon he says, can I bring my cat? I'm like, we have a cat up there? So we go, we get the cat, bring the cat back down. And then he's like, can I have my bike? Yes. So, but it felt like he was moving in.
Slowly.
So, yeah. So we do all that. And then a few months later, he starts talking about belly pain and not feeling well. And it turns out that he had a big tumor, and that was actually around his aorta. So they said it, when he goes, it's going to be quick, and it's going to be a heart attack. Ken chose not to drink when he was here, and he chose not to smoke pot or anything. We'd actually asked with pain whether or not he needed anything. He goes, no, no, no. He said, and we had hospice attached to him. He connected with his sister in Virginia Beach, who he had not talked to in years. He talked to his ex-lover, who we did not know existed, and they did have a child together, and he connected with her. He connected with all of his friends that he'd had that used to live up that direction, or they all came here. He died 28 days after diagnosis, and yet said all of these beautiful, rich goodbyes to people and shared things with them. That piece of art right there is one of Ken's. Yeah, he created our logo for our farm stand across the street. He was a very talented guy and an interesting person, and he taught us so much about death here, which was quite poignant. He will always, Ken will always just be this marker in my heart of a guy that I never thought would ever thought would live here,
yeah.
And he did.
Sherry and her colleague who had befriended Ken changed his life. He was able to leave this world saying goodbye to those he loved. He was able to leave this world with a roof over his head and four walls built by love. He was able to leave this world in a place where he was cared for and cherished. If you haven't already formed a warm spot in your heart for Sherry, I would be surprised. As she recalls Ken's departure from this world, her eyes well up with tears of memory and fondness, and I feel shivers up my spine. Warm shivers that are brought on by the kindness that I see in her. This is why we are here, to listen to individual stories that might go untold. We'll be right back. Did you know that socks are the number one most requested clothing item in homeless shelters? Well, Bombas is on a mission to change that. They created the most comfortable socks in the history of feet, and for every pair of socks purchased, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. Designed with special comfort innovations, colors, patterns, lengths, and styles, Bombas are perfect for the whole family. Get your hands on a pair of Bombas socks, and your feet will thank you. Bombas has donated over 20 million pairs and counting. They're made from super soft natural cotton, and every pair is designed with arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed that's supportive but not too thick. My new favorites are the new Merino Wool Socks, designed to be breathable, dry, and never itchy, with just the right amount of thickness. With tons of different colors, patterns, lengths, and styles, Bombas socks also make the perfect gift for anyone on your list. I wear them every day, and I have to say, I'm in love with how they feel. Anyone that knows me knows that I have a bit of a sock and shoe addiction, but sometimes the greatest look doesn't always go hand in hand with the greatest fit or feel, especially those socks that creep down into your shoe. I hate that feeling. With Bombas socks, you are sure to get an incredible experience in both fit, feel, and look. And the best part, for every pair you buy, you are supporting the Bombas mission in providing socks for those in need. Now that is a mission I can get behind, and I know you will too. Save 20% on your first purchase when you shop at bombas.com/homelesspod. That's bombas.com/homelesspod to save 20%. bombas.com/homelesspod. Sherry and I talk for another hour, and her stories are amazing. I'll continue to use some of that interview in future episodes, but for now, let's go on a tour of Sarge's place. As we walk around the building, we see a kitchen with two stoves, a large pantry, rooms for veterans to call a temporary home, a lounge with couches and a TV, and a business room, where a resident is using a computer while taking online courses to earn his degree.
Let me show you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, just to say this out loud, this is poignant to me. This is Jason Hansen. Jason is the only guy locally in Forks who has died in Iraq. he was born and raised here. So he died in 05. He was in the Marines, and this was his lab, his buddy Travis. So
he died overseas?
Yeah. Okay.
As we make our way down one of the hallways, there's a 16 by 36 inch canvas print of a soldier appearing in his late teens or early 20s, walking alongside a military vehicle in the desert of Iraq. He is in full combat uniform, and he looks to be on patrol. It looks like a picture out of Time magazine.
Actually, it was a big explosion, and it killed five Marines. But he was a local guy. He was 20 years old. He was just a baby. But it was they had a photographer embedded in the in his unit. And so this picture came from him. And I sent him a message and I said,
picture.
I would love to make a canvas for her. He's like, oh, please. Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
So it just always feels like Jason's with us. And it's it's significant. And then my friend Sarah, her brother was a captain over in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a fictional book about the war.
Okay.
And she drew the pictures. So
oh, that's amazing.
She gave us the copies of them for our walls here.
Oh, that's
really
amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Currently in the midst of painting.
Okay.
So it seems a little chaotic. It'll close up.
Okay.
So they don't have much space.
Sure.
This is the smallest bay, but they just have room for...
Sleeping space.
Yeah, it's just a sleeping space. And then there's a curtain across. A nice bathroom in there. With three shower stalls, a toilet, a couple of urinals.
Okay.
But it's a small space.
Yeah.
And we're well aware that it's a small space.
Yeah. Did fire code, was that an issue?
Oh, yeah. So we're federally inspected annually. We have five inspections with the feds.
Okay.
So they check to make sure that meds are securable, that we have... there's a nurse, there's a hygienist that comes in, and there's physical. So the sprinkler system, we used to have a sprinkler system in here when we first bought the place, and it wasn't adequate enough, so we had to completely buy a whole new sprinkler system. Like I said, it was 120 grand.
Wow.
And we have to buy new equipment for it right now because it's just, there's a backflow issue, so it's going to be about $3,000 to replace some parts.
Oh my goodness.
It's just expensive. We're starting to see things that are starting to wear down.
Yeah. Of course, wear and tear and age.
As many people as possible.
Right.
What are you doing here? I'll kick you out, but you won't let.
So cute. Look at that little tail.
Yeah, and he can be so vicious. You know what? I'm gonna be doing something selfish.
A brown and red tabby cat comes to say hello, and residents of the home will often be seen petting, feeding, and cuddling with him.
He gets plenty of food, but she bought him a little bit. Hey, Miss Charlene, I'm gonna open that and give that to Mr. So they have a communal kitchen and the ranges were bought by the Combat Vet Association, Motorcycle Association of Bremerton.
Excellent.
They bought us our microwaves too. Mm-hmm. We need to reconfigure the kitchen, and it's going to be about $30,000. We need to make this island smaller. Look at him, he stood on his hind legs.
That's cute.
We need to bring it out a little further and have a smaller bump because people don't feel comfortable being behind each other. PTSD issues.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Charlene's okay with it. There's certain people I know I can go get a cup of coffee, but other folks, you know, they need a little more wiggle room around them.
Yeah.
Charlene's
space.
Nice, and she lets me walk back there and get coffee whenever I need it. And then, we've got a commercial refrigerator, so everybody has a bay in their little area for their stuff.
Okay.
But then, local people get stuff. There's a lady named Kathy. Her husband died a couple years ago of cancer. He's a vet. She brings in cake every couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
It's lovely.
That's lovely.
The freezer was from the Elks Lodge.
Okay.
This is the alternate bay, we call it. That's where Charlene has, there's two bays in there the same size as the men's,
mm-hmm.
and then a private bathroom.
Okay.
The pantry is always, we try to keep it stocked. These kinds of things, like razors and shaving cream, these came from people that follow us on Facebook, and they send them to us.
That is awesome.
The canned goods from Food Drive, the log truck driver's stand. That always made me feel emotional, that they did for us with the first responders at Christmas time.
Oh my gosh.
We got a laundry room here with two laundry machines in it, which is for Airbnb.
Yeah.
Here, and we used to have this little washer dryer combo, but it takes
I've
like 3-4
yeah.
hours and it irritated everybody, so we went to stack them in the little
room
too.
Do most of these utilities are being, or in the, they're being donated usually, or
no?
No.
So it costs a lot of money.
Right.
To do
this
everything
is donated.
Here. But yes, this is a Coast Guard vet that passed away in Fort Angeles. And we had a guy that taught himself how to play piano. He still comes back and visits. He lives here in town. And he plays beautifully.
Oh, that's
lovely. Really nice.
Yeah.
We'll walk down here and we'll go back out the back. So, of course, the restroom, the PC lab. He's a college student, Mr. Steve.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well done, sir.
College just wants, he won't stop. He just keeps going and going.
Once you get going, yeah.
Yes. Friends on TV and friends in real life, right, Jack?
There you go.
Model friends.
We need new furniture, so we just put in a grant with the Military Officers Association asking for $5,000 to buy a new freezer and to buy some furniture.
Great.
So. We need new friends.
Sometimes people do need new friends. Jack! We're not going to talk about that. Yeah, that's right. I'll give them hell.
This is great.
David, are you in there? Mr. Turnford! So this is our house manager, David. David's a vet, and David is awesome. We adore him. And so he lives here, and he kind of helps us when things are weird or funky, and during the evenings or on the weekends when Jennifer and I are here. And he drives people to medical appointments.
Fantastic. And I won't hold the Patriots hat against you.
It's okay.
I did. Yeah, I saw it. It's okay. Hey, you know what? Great team. It's okay.
I hate the Patriots, too. It's all good. We give them shit all the time.
See my Red Sox hat?
I do. Oh, we got an East Coaster here.
But you see the New York hat next to it.
That's impressive.
Well, I'm doing it against the whole grain and every vibrant in my soul. It hurts me to do it, but there was an old vet upstairs.
I told him about Ken. He was only here for a month when Ken was up there, and Ken had just been diagnosed with cancer. He was going up and chatting with him all the time and bonded with him tight.
I did. Yeah. I didn't know
he and did. He was a devout what kind of fan?
And I'm from Massachusetts. Really.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's like...
Oh, no, that's the rival.
It was so funny.
So I went up one day, and it was real nice to Ken. And, you know, growly, but he got to like me a little bit, I think.
Oh, he loved
you.
So
I gave him the Boston little mug, and he smashed it on
the ground. Did he really?
Yeah,
never
he
told
did.
Me that.
He smashed it.
Smashed it.
Wow.
And he goes, now we can talk.
Oh! That's great.
I mean, just an old contact. But what a beautiful man he was.
Yeah.
Like, anyways, yeah, so I got to wear his...
I love that.
Fly the colors, man.
Do you ever wear the hat?
I
mean,
So wait, then Mike Stivers had cancer up there, and he passed away. He's the one with lung cancer. He just died recently. And what did he have there again?
Yankee hat, man. For anybody that comes through that place up there, I don't know about
Yankee
the spiritual
fan.
World.
I
right.
said, I,
Yankee
dude,
fan.
I think it's someone's trying to tell you something.
Oh, so, my.
I know both of them were hardcore Yankee fans.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Oh, now, I don't know why my brain didn't register with this. The person you should interview about homelessness is this guy.
Yeah?
Because he lives his sobriety, and he's a really... I adore David. He's a wonderful man.
Upon meeting David, I immediately felt a glow of humility and caring from him. In a near future episode, we will talk with David, and we'll hear his entire story. I can't wait for you to get to know him. You will be a better person for it.
Anyways, yeah, I got a story. No, I went from Park Avenue to Park Bench, as they would say. The awareness needs to be out of what's happening here more than what's happening with me.
Yeah.
Because I am...
Oh, look at you. You're being all humble. Mr. Humble Pie.
I am a product of this.
Yeah, but you've done this work. You've done this work.
We better place to do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thanks. Brother, nice to meet you.
Yeah, we'll talk.
We'll talk. Thanks.
Don't make me cry. Stop that. Stop that nonsense.
All right, have a good visit.
See you later.
Thank you. So we've got... we used to not have a door here.
Oh,
we now have a door. Because we had a guy that was inviting all his buddies up there. Oh. We just got a smoking area. The Motorcycle Association did a fundraiser, and this is for everybody's bikes, which is nice.
Very cool.
So we've got the three apartments upstairs. A little bit of storage, not much, mainly mechanical room, so we're very landlocked here. So we are connected with Olympic Correction Centers. Hello, girls! Where's Tina? There's Tina. So we have, Olympic Correction Centers has work crews, and they have put up our netting for us.
Okay.
This used to be a tiny little hen yard. They made this nice big hen yard for us. They made little chicken swings. And then we had a fundraiser for, that's a giant hen house is what that is right there.
Hey, Joe, girls, what you doing?
The trucks. This was an old Coast Guard truck. We have.
Yeah, look at that.
We have an old Navy truck, and it was a guy in town that passed away, and he and his brother used to have a logging company, and they used these up in the woods. So.
Holy cow.
Eventually, what will happen is we'll have Hobucket House will be lengthwise. It'll be a long ranch that will go back in here.
Okay.
We have room on this property for an apartment. Peek in, just to show you what we got.
This is the secondhand store, okay.
Hello, love!
What is all
look at this. Hello.
So, this is Cheyenne.
Hi, Cheyenne.
She's awesome. She's the lady that actually runs our farm stand. She's covering up her logo. We'll have a 3,000 square foot store in front, two-story in the front, coffee bar, coffee roastery,
awesome.
So we can sell coffee online.
Yes.
World War II theme, because I love that shit.
I love that.
Nice? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll be buying coffee from us. But
of course.
We'll have supported employment for vets. We'll have a woodworking shop, metalworking shop, outdoor welding area out back. Uh-huh. And then the vets can be, I know, Drew could be working for me.
Yeah.
Hello, her husband. So, but the purpose is that then we can have supported employment for the vets.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Take care. I'm trying to give him the nickel tour, but it's turning into a quarter.
No, not so much. Hey, it's great to meet you.
I'm a hugger. Are you a hugger?
Yes, I'm a hugger.
Thank you so much for coming.
This is awesome. You too. Oh, yeah. Have a good day.
And that was my morning with Sherry at Sarge's place. She has done an incredible thing, going out of her comfort zone to start and maintain a place for our veterans. She cares so much for each and every individual that enters the doors of the building, and she is setting up areas to employ veterans and to help them on their way through recovery, transition, and redemption. I grew up in the 1980s, collecting Garbage Pail Kid cards, using Aquanet hairspray, sorry about that ozone layer, and addicted to the A-Team. I remember seeing commercials for the military as a little kid. You heard one for the Army at the opening of this episode. Here's a short little commercial from the 80s for joining the Navy. My deepest respect does go out to all those that serve, have served, and those that sacrificed their lives for us. Here's a bit of nostalgia for you.
Shape our future. We invite you to learn the technology of tomorrow while you serve your country in the Navy of today.
As I drove back home, I pulled over to take some time to walk on the beach. What you're hearing are the waves that I recorded while I gazed deeply over the deep blue and green water, and I saw the lonely birds that would glide on the wind. The beach is empty for miles each way, and it is total solitude. I sat for a while and I reflected on Sarge's place. Every day in America, 22 veterans commit suicide. Every night in America, 40,000 veterans are on the streets. The National Coalition for Homeless Veterans and other entities are doing all they can to combat this epidemic. We need to help. Sherry is fighting. She is resilient and passionate about helping others. And I didn't expect it, but maybe I'm starting to see where this podcast is going. Individual stories are so desperately needing to be told. I will forge on. In the spirit of transparency, it is your support that helps these stories get told. Homeless has now set up a Patreon to allow you to give back to the homeless. Monthly subscriptions as well as one-time donations are appreciated, and all money collected goes directly to supporting the homeless through resources, supporting various organizations, and providing meals. If you'd like to join in this fight against homelessness, please consider donating at patreon.com/homelesspnw. That's patreon.com/homelesspnw. If you or someone you know is a veteran and is seeking support and help, please contact Sherry or Jennifer at Sarge's Place. No matter where you are in the country or even the world, Sherry knows the resources and can help guide you or a loved one to shelter and support. Contact her at 360-347-5252. Again, that number is 360-347-5252. You can also find information in the episode notes and follow Sarge's Place on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you for listening, and please subscribe wherever you hear podcasts. Feedback is always welcome, and if you have someone dear to you that you would like to be a guest on the show, please shoot Homeless an email at homelesspodcast@yahoo.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and send us a message there as well. Don't forget to follow Sarge's Place and see the amazing work Sherry and her team are doing. In the next few episodes, you will hear from David and others, and I guarantee their stories will drive down into your heart and possibly send shivers up your spine. Good shivers. Awakening shivers. See you in 2 weeks, and until then, don't look away.